Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender.
Hello, folks. Thank you for calling or coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative and libertarian conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. For the folks of you who are not as familiar with the Patriot Journalist Network, you may find the link to the network if you are a Facebook user, going to the search engine and just type in Patriot Journalist Network, and you will find a couple other shows on there, such as Charlotte Dively's Pray USA and also Mark Prasick's Full Armor, which you can find from Monday to Friday evenings from 8 p.m. till midnight, and that's Eastern Time. And I also recommend folks to listen to the Constitutional Conservatives Unite, which is the Samuel Samford Show, which you can find practically every evening from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m., and that also is Eastern Time. And also, starting in October, there will be the Tex and Rex Show, which will be on from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, tonight we have some special guests who are on the line, and that should be the Libertarian Party's Tennessee State Chair, Jay Polk, and also the Florida Chair of Broward County, and that is Donald Sheldon. Now, tonight we will go in depth into the Libertarian Party stances on foreign domestic policies, including economic and social issues, state's authority and sovereignty, and the ways in which the Libertarian Party will affect the 2012 presidential election. Now, before I let the gentleman in, and I'd like to play a audio here from Alan Keyes, and he is speaking on the issues of Obama and Romney and how policy-wise there is not much difference, and that he doesn't say this, but one of the reasons why for us we are exploring the differing third parties, including the gentleman we have tonight from the Libertarian Party. And after I play that audio, we have an ad from Gary Johnson that we will listen to, and then we will proceed from there. So thank you once again, folks, for coming in, and also I want to thank you folks who are listening to this on the recording archives. So without further ado, I will like to play this audio from Alan Keyes.
I think the most dangerous thing about Barack Obama is the forces he represents. Forces that I think actually have their hand in the whole political elite, economic elite in America. Banks, politicians, other folks. I think Barack Obama is like a number of such people. He is less dangerous for what he is than for what he represents. He's just a body. He's a body without any particular background, and who never had any particular clout. And therefore you have to ask, what is it that has suddenly put him in this position? It's because he's not in that position. It's because forces that created him, fabricated him, literally whole cloth, right? And were then able successfully to impose him on the American people, I think with the complicity of people in both parties, are now operating in such a way that through the threat of Barack Obama, they are actually pushing through things Americans would otherwise find intolerable. Mitt Romney, a man with a record that shows the implementation of Obamacare, the coercion of conscience, the implementation of gay marriage, all the things that people love to hate about Barack Obama, including the fact that Mitt Romney has declared that he didn't find any problem with the National Defense Authorization Act, and other things. Okay? So all these areas that people are deeply concerned about, Obama's so terrible, Obama's an abuser, Obama made a potential tyrant and all that. And suddenly I'm supposed to believe that the exact same things advocated, implemented, stood for by Mitt Romney don't represent a danger to the country? Now, why would this be? The only way this can be true is if I think that Barack Obama is just personally bad. It's not his policies I oppose, and so forth. That's a lie. I, at least, don't pretend to know Barack Obama well enough to decide whether as an individual person I like him, dislike him, I don't know. And frankly, in public policy terms, I don't care. I look at what the man stands for and what he's doing to the country, what his policies stand for and what they are doing to the country, and I say no. And so if Mitt Romney comes along and I look in his background and I see a tendency to implement the same policies, which will have the same deadly effect on the country, stand for the same positions, how am I supposed to tell you or anybody else that I prefer Romney? On what grounds would I prefer Romney? It makes no sense to me. I don't see how people of conscience can do this. I see the same policies, I shall oppose them in the same way. And if I did not, it would mean that I cared more for personality than I do for the good of my country. And I refuse to do that. People died rather than do that. Don't we understand that there were Americans who once gave their lives because they thought that the good of the country was more important than pleasing personalities? We don't have that in us anymore? Because I think we better. If we want to be a free people, then we better rediscover it. And so, no. I look at Romney and I see that there's one salient difference, though. Romney has already implemented bad policies, destructive policies, in the context of Massachusetts, that Obama has been unable to implement because he's met with such strong resistance. Now, let me see. If you put Romney in and he's wearing a Republican label and a conservative cachet, right? That's going to silence a certain element of the opposition to those things, and he will be able to get them through. Why is it that people think that the guy who is failing to get them through is the greater evil, and the guy committed to the same policies who may be able to get them through is the lesser evil?
Okay, folks, and that is definitely something we will be discussing this evening. And as a segue into the discussion of the Libertarian Party, I thought it would be a good start to play an ad by Gary Johnson. And then we will continue on with interviewing the panel and our two special guests.
My name is Gary Johnson. Of the many people running for president in 2012, only three will be on the ballot in all 50 states come November. Myself, a Republican, and a Democrat. For those of you worried I'll take votes away from the Democrat, and to those of you afraid I'll take votes away from the Republican, I say good. They deserve to lose your vote. Take as many votes as possible away from the people in both parties, keeping us in a state of perpetual war, increasing unsustainable debt, record joblessness, and a bipartisan economic death wish, ruining America for 330 million of us. Over 80% of you have stated you want a third choice, and now you have one in me. For every face carved into Mount Rushmore, there was once a man willing to put his principles before his party. Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt, each one of them ran for office as an outsider, and each one of them changed America for the better. If you're ready to vote for better days in America, I'm not the third choice in 2012, I'm the only choice. Be libertarian with me for one election. If after 4 years you decide honest, effective government doesn't work for you, you can always vote corruption and failure back into office again. Live free.
Okay, folks, and that was the ad from Gary Johnson running for President of the United States for the Libertarian Party. And at this time, I will bring in two members of the Bard's Logic Political Talk panel. and that is Chris, our resident strategist, and also one of our experts here, which is Kelly Mordecai, also the author of The Hidden Fourth Branch about the federal grand jury. So, Chris and Kelly, I am opening up your mics, and go ahead. I'll leave the floor to Kelly, and it sounds like you've got some things you want to chime in about and perhaps an introduction of one of our guests.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Robert. In 2008, I couldn't decide the lesser of two evils, so I actually voted for Alan Keyes. I just love that man. I love his principles, his love for the Constitution. Of course, Alan Keyes didn't go very far as presidential candidate, but, you know, back in 2004, I voted for Michael Budnarik, who was a Libertarian candidate then, because I was just, back then, I was just saying, I'm done with this elephant-donkey game. And I also wanted to introduce Donald Chell. I know, I'm not sure if we got confirmation whether he made it tonight or not.
He did.
Oh, great, great. Hey, Donald.
Let me go ahead and let the two gentlemen in. Go ahead, Kelly, and go ahead, Donald.
Kelly,
hey,
thank
Donald.
You for introducing me.
Yeah, well, actually, quite a bit more, I think, I wanted to communicate about Donald Sheldon. He is the chair of the Broward County Libertarian Party there in Florida. And I met him at a Libertarian National Convention, and he got my book, and because he read it, he was ready for action. He has submitted a complaint to a federal grand jury there in Fort Lauderdale regarding Obama's kill list. And not only does this man have a deep love for the Constitution, he obviously doesn't like Obama. He doesn't really like the Republicans either. And he's also been, he's helping with some business things, and he's kind of taken me under his wing as a very mature, successful businessman, and I have very much respect for this man. So that's, with that intro, I'll just turn the table back over to you, Robert.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and thank you very much, Donald, for coming in this evening. And I believe we also have Jay Polk in as well on the line. And so also, Chris, if you'd like to chime in with anything to start, go ahead, and then we can move over to the introductions of the party and then go on to the questions.
You bet. I just want to say thanks, guys, for coming on. I think this is awesome, a great platform, a mixture of talent and background. You know, Donald and I have actually had several conversations over the last couple of days, still getting to know Jay. But I'm looking forward to tonight. I think we got some game here. I really do. So I'm ready to rock and roll. Q&A time.
Well, great. Well, and real quick, gentlemen, before we move into that, I'd like to give both Jay and the opportunity, you know, and Donald the opportunity to do a little intro for themselves, and then we'll move on to the questions. So we will start with Jay, who is the Tennessee State Chair. So, Jay, go ahead.
All right, well, that's correct. Yeah, again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here on the show and discuss the Libertarian Party. I'm actually pretty new to the Libertarian Party itself. I think I've probably always considered myself a Libertarian. But the party itself I've only been involved with probably about 4 or 5 years. I came along in 2008, and much like, you know, many others, I saw the corruption and the horrible choices that the Democrats and Republicans were giving us. And I knew there had to be a third, better choice. And so that's kind of why I seeked out the Libertarian Party, you know, read their platform, studied the candidates, and thought, you know, this is really a great way to go. If nothing else, it's a much better choice than the two that was that were being chosen for us, essentially. So, you know, and then a couple of years ago at a convention, voted as state chair, and I've been just kind of been doing as much as I can to promote the Libertarian Party and libertarianism just as much as I can. So.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you very much. And Mr. Sheldon, Donald, would you like to do a short introduction yourself?
Absolutely. My background is Wall Street. I spent 20 years there, a little over, and part of those years I was in a situation where we were unregulated by the federal government. about 10 years, and about 12 years or so was actually when we had regulation. And I can tell you right now which is more fun. Now, don't misunderstand, I was on the public finance side, and Congress of the United States, when they put the SEC into place, exempted the states and their municipalities from having the SEC as their supervisory position. In fact, they left it completely unregulated. Of course, we always had state regulation of one type or another. And when I got into the Libertarian Party, which is several years ago, I discovered, of course, the idea that the Libertarian Party carries. In fact, one of my bosses at the time had left Wall Street and was working as a consultant for General Electric Capital. And my boss at the time, I was asking him what his party was, and he said, "I'm a libertarian." I said, "Well, what is that?" He said, "Well, libertarians believe that the federal government has two obligations under the Constitution. One is to deliver the mail, and the other is to protect the borders. And since they don't seem to be able to do either of those very well, why would we hire them for anything else?" And I said, "You know, I said it was something, but now I know exactly what I am. I'm a libertarian." So that pretty much sums up my aspect of what I think libertarianism is all about. A restrictive federal government with limited power, which is what our Constitution calls for, and we have basically lost our Constitution at this point. In fact, I have a constitutional lawyer coming in this next week, next month, to speak to us on how his topic is, how we have lost the Constitution. And Kelly was kind enough to help assist me, in fact, he's done an enormous amount of work with me on setting up this idea of stopping Obama's completely unauthorized assassination of people around the world. Now, you know, I have not found a lawyer yet that tells me that the President of the United States is authorized under any condition, under the Constitution or under any of our laws, to have assassinations done without due process. It's just not there. And what this guy is doing is just outrageous to the point where we have taken a complaint to the grand jury down here. I'm going to be taking a complaint to other grand juries around the country. We don't have to only make complaints to grand juries in our own area. We can reach out, and I think the proper place to go, in fact, one of the clerks down at the federal level told me what we probably ought to do is file this in Washington, D.C. itself, and I intend to do just that. And I guess that's pretty much an outline on me. I've been active in the Libertarian Party, for, as I say, for a number of years. This is my second term. In fact, it's actually about my fourth term in office as far as being the chairman of the Libertarian Party for Broward County. I served once a few years ago and took a hiatus out of it, and now I'm back in it. And I'm back in it for a number of reasons. One reason, however, is that there is a rising tide here to eliminate the drug laws that we have on our books now that are called the War on Drugs. And I can tell you all right now that that's one of my favorite areas to work inside of. The drug laws in this country are, you know, I know we're probably going to touch it later, but let me just say to you, it's a crime unto itself. I mean, it really is just awful what we're doing to our young people. And that said, I'll turn the back over to one of our hosts, whoever wants to take it.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. And we will get to the question portion of the interview at this time. And I will start, and then after me, I'll turn it over to Chris. And either one of the gentlemen could answer these questions. And the first one is about the strategy to win, and there's multiple-part questions. And I'll take them slowly and repeat them as necessary. One is, there's talk, and I believe this is the case, that Gary Johnson will be at the debate with Obama and Romney. That's one part. And is that really true? Two, how many ballots is Mr. Johnson on? And three, if you could give us, and we're working on getting Johnson himself. I've been in contact with someone from the campaign, and we're hoping to have him on either October 1st or 4th. But he also would like to hear some folks from the party talk about his background and experience.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, yeah, I was just going to speak up on the debate as far as it goes. I know that he has, Gary Johnson campaign has recently filed a lawsuit against the Commission for Presidential Debates. That's kind of an antitrust lawsuit. It's kind of taking the whole you know, limited choices kind of thing that they're going for. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what comes from that, to see you know, if it's even given any attention, if it's just ignored, you know, or you know, of course the intended consequence would, of course, be Gary Johnson in the debate. So it's going to be really interesting. But it really seems like, as far as the debates go, you know, it really seems like that Gary Johnson's really doing everything he can to get into the debates. And if nothing else, is causing a lot of, you know, a lot of stir and buzz around why so many candidates, or pretty much all but two of them, are excluded. And I do know that he's on at least 47 states. And there's three that are still kind of up in the air: Michigan, Pennsylvania, and I believe Oklahoma. But you know, of course, there's legal action going on in those three, and so it's possible it could be all 50. But today it's just 47.
Okay.
That's exactly the way I'm hearing it too. As a matter of fact, one of my people that's involved in the campaign tells me that they have three lawsuits going. And we're expecting to have him in the debate at this point. And I just heard Gary just an hour ago talking to a group out in California, and he was saying that he's definitely in 47 states and expects to be in all 50. He's in 47 states and in Washington, D.C., as far as being on the ballot is concerned. And the candidate is, you know, whenever you want to get some information about the candidate, there's all sorts of wonderful things up on YouTube. But he is an impressive candidate. He's by far, in my opinion, the best candidate that any third party has ever run. In fact, I think he's the best candidate we've had run for the office of the presidency ever. I think just without any equivocation, this man has all the qualifications that we need. And I'll be happy to talk about any or all of the things that I particularly am impressed with. His business career, his climbing of Mount Everest is one of the things that gets me. I mean, I can't imagine how anybody can do that. And he has climbed the four highest peaks on the four continents, including Mount Everest. And, you know, number one, that takes a dedication and an idea of courage that is just, what I say, it scares me, and I'm fearless. I mean, the man is really an incredible human being.
Okay, and you've made mention of credentials, and we could definitely touch more on that at another time, or when, you know, Johnson comes in himself. Of course, he can speak for that as well. But one of the things we like to touch on is about the Ron Paul voters that the Libertarian Party has been courting, and especially the conservatives as well. Now, how does Mr. Johnson, you know, he's just answering for him, and we could go more into depth when we have a discussion with him. If you could explain more for the audience about how to allay concerns over his laissez-faire attitude, at least the apparent, I should say, laissez-faire attitude, vis-a-vis the moral and cultural issues and his assertions that the so-called gay marriage is a federal issue under the 14th Amendment, which does not seem to be particularly a part of the Libertarian platform.
Jay, would you like to take that, or would you like me to take it?
Well, you can go ahead. Yeah, I started off on the next one, so I'll let you take this one.
Fine. I'm not certain where he's coming from on that particular issue either. I heard that again tonight, and I had my personal opinion is that the Libertarian Party has always had the position that we do not believe the federal government has any right to be involved in that. I've told you already the limited areas, in fact, where we really feel that the federal government is supposed to be, and it's supposed to be limited by the Constitution to a very, very few areas in our lives. As a matter of fact, federal government, in my opinion, should not have enough. We shouldn't even be aware that it's out there. I mean, from an individual point of view, they ought not to have any of this regulatory power that they have taken upon themselves through a violation, in my opinion, of the Constitution of the United States. And to get involved with our veterans in any way, in shape, form, or fashion is just beyond the pale. I don't think they have any business there. And I certainly would say that to you that I just disagree with Gary's position on that.
And was this? And do you believe? I'm just asking for yourself and for the other gentleman. Do you believe this would be Johnson's attempt in trying to sway Democrats?
Oh, I think without any question, that's probably what he's trying to do. I think that, and by the way, I think it may very well be successful because I think the Democrats as a whole are so disgusted with what they have done in putting this man in office. I mean, I can point to you to an editorial in the Washington Post, of all places, an absolutely liberal organization, in my opinion, that says, you know, I too am disgruntled and disappointed in this man. And this particular author just takes the man apart piece by piece by piece and shows that he has done nothing at all in his life and that he is an absolute product of affirmative action, and that's all he is. And I think that there's a good amount of the Democratic Party that feels this way at this point. So, you know, perhaps Gary is trying to do something with Democrats on that basis, but I don't know why, and I don't see that there's any really need to. I think the Democrats will abandon this man when they see a viable candidate, and when we get him on the stage in a debate, I think they will see a viable candidate.
Okay, and last part of my questions before I go over to Chris is that we've heard some attacks by Johnson on Mr. Good and Ms. Stein, rather than, it seems, in some ways, focusing on Obama and Romney. Is there anything you could speak on, either one of you gentlemen, on that?
Well, I can say really the videos and the commercials I've seen that Johnson has put out have really been kind of against the Democrat and the Republican parties. I do know that, you know, personally and some other folks have, you know, on an individual basis have had several differences and discussions with, you know, Constitution and Green Party members. I guess I'm not sure, you know, if I haven't really heard of any attacks against the other third-party candidates.
I haven't either.
I'm sorry, hold on, let me interject. I can't verify that without my other caller, and he's not here yet. So it was something that he brought up with me. So, you know, it's not trying to be a trick question. It was something he said, wow, you know, you need to ask him about this. So we'll have to wait for Rex to chime in on that. Sorry, guys.
And actually, speaking of Rex, yeah, I believe I am in a chat with him right now, and I keep putting the same thing. Hold on a second, gentlemen. There we go. And let me believe if he'll be calling in shortly. And Rex, of course, is also part of the panel, but he is also has one of the co-hosts, of the Tex and Rex show, which I mentioned earlier, can be found on starting in the first week of October, Monday and Tuesday evenings from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And what we could do is we can revisit that question later when Rex comes in, which, as I said, I believe he will be calling in shortly. So I will leave the floor to you, Chris, and if we may, gentlemen, when Rex does come into the show, we can leave the floor to him so we can finish up that question for the audience. So, Chris, I'll leave the floor to you.
Okay,
you,
guys.
Gentlemen,
start your engines. I want to go through this whole immigration borders guest worker program thing, and I've got some bullets on it, and I know you guys have seen that. But I have some gray areas and some confusions, and I think people do on the outside and listeners and people on my group and things like that. So let's see what we can do about walking through this and clarifying these things so we get it. Is that fair?
Sure.
Cool. Okay. the first thing is the idea of the border itself. Now, I've heard from other what was that? Hold on. My speaker just came on my computer. I'm sorry. That was really weird. I just heard myself. Okay. So the first thing is trying to get a handle on the Libertarian Party position on the border. I have literally heard analogies of it being ending up to be an open border with freedoms that no constraints or anything. Can you guys help me understand what the facts are on that position?
Well, I know that personally, you know, the more I study it and the more I look at the immigration system, of course, I think many people can agree that the immigration system we have set up today is wrong. You know, we're splitting families apart. We're doing a lot of really bad things. A lot of it does have to do, I think, you know, with the war on drugs. And so there's some other things, of course, that can be done to help alleviate the problem. However, you know, as far as the Libertarian Party itself, I do think that, you know, the official stance is there should be some mechanism in place that can help identify people coming into the country. I know there's a statement in the platform about you're trying to find people or keep people out maybe that want to do us harm, that are coming over here to intend to you know, hurt people or criminals or whatever. So I do think there's still a safeguard in place, even with Libertarian administration. Now, you know, Libertarians, like you said, across the border, you know, are pretty much – you're going to vary on their stances. I know the more that personally I've read about it, it's kind of hard for me to justify having any mechanism in place and just saying, look, you know, if we have freedom, we should be free to travel pretty much anywhere across borders. I mean, here in America, we cross, you know, state lines without any harassment. And so why should it change, you know, when we go across the a national border? So, and you know, it just kind of, it really comes down to freedom and personal freedom and, you know, trying to better yourself. If you think it's better in America, then why should you be denied the chance to try? I think there are a lot of strings that are attached to that argument. In fact, mm-hmm. some people have said, well, we can't keep allowing immigrants to come into this country because of the welfare system or because we have this massive debt, you know, that we're trying to fight and, you know, all these problems that America currently has. Well, we can't have immigrants. Well, you know, it's not really the immigrants' problem that we have such a screwed-up system, or that, you know, that we've got politicians that have just spent us, you know, to oblivion. So, you know, to deny people a chance to better themselves, to find a better place for their family, to contribute, I think is really unfair if we deny everybody that opportunity.
Right.
Well,
go ahead, Don.
My answer to the question would be this. I think that I think Jay is absolutely on the right track when he says that there should be an easy access to our country into and out of it. The question becomes one of economics. And I think that we have a number of issues along that line. Now, you know, our drug laws are causing thousands of people to be killed in Mexico. Thousands. And that's just a disgrace. And there's no reason for it. I mean, you know, when Roosevelt ended prohibition on alcohol, the murder rate in the United States dropped by 60% in 1 year. I mean, we'll do the same exact thing when we finally get around to ending prohibition on drugs. And I think that will end a great deal of our border concerns. Now, I understood that we were going to have a young man from Texas on here tonight, and he was saying that, well, you know, Texas border is supposed to be closed, but they're wide open. And I think he was better equipped to talk to this subject than I am by far. And let me make one point that I think needs to be made here about the Libertarian Party and how it's structured. I speak for the Libertarian Party in Broward County, Florida. I was elected by people in Broward County, Florida, to be chairman of the Libertarian Party down here. People that are elected, that elected me are registered voters with the Libertarian Party. So my point of view is not necessarily the total point of view of the Libertarian Party. If you want that person, you've got to talk to the national chairman. And he will give you his position and what he feels like the official position of the party is. Mm-hmm. My position is my county's position, and I speak for my county. And I know that Jay speaks for the state of Tennessee. He was elected for that position, and therefore he speaks for the state. And that's the way we're structured.
Sure.
And it's so don't and obviously you can see that we are to use the old joke that I've forgotten who came up with it. I'm not a member of any organized political party. I'm a Democrat. Well, you know, you can say the same thing about the Libertarians. I'm certainly not a member of any organized party. I'm a Libertarian. And what do we think? Well, we think that the government has very, very few obligations and has very, very limited usefulness in our lives. And that's basically our whole premise, and we go from there. And as far as this immigration issue is concerned, we obviously have got 11 million or more people here in the United States that are apparently here illegally. What are we going to do with them? Sooner or later, we're probably going to have to do something to bring on into citizenship in some manner. And I think there have been some reasonable types of political positions taken there. But I really, I don't have an answer to that. I think that that's, most of these people are good citizens. They've got jobs. They're doing, they're doing what they came here to do. And I don't see any real hurt. Sometimes we kind of look for the solution to a problem, but first of all, we have to figure out what the heck the problem really is.
Right.
Are these people a problem? I don't think so. And I'm not sure what problem they are, if they are any at all. If we've got a system that's fouled up as far as our people putting people on the government dole, then we need to solve that problem. It's not having anything to do with illegal or legal citizens. It's it's a national problem in a whole different regard. If we've got people that are taking advantage of what's available here in the United States, maybe we ought to see what's available here in the United States and see if that's the problem.
Not to interrupt, but I got a lot of questions to go through. But I watched a video clip right before we started this of Dr. Ron Paul talking about this, and he said one of the biggest problems is the carrots that we hang out there for people to come across the border and get, whether it be welfare or health care or free schools and things like that, that we've created an environment that is causing this to happen. It's one thing. And Newt Gingrich talks about a guest worker program. He says our system is broken, and it is not easy for people to come here and do what they want to do. If they want to come here and work, honest people come here to work and, not deal drugs and shoot people, but, come here to participate, make money, and improve their lives, as Jay says, cool. And our system is broken for that. So, you get this crossover, and I believe that it's, I really do. I believe it's part of a plan to screw our country up as bad as they can. But, how do you prove all that? You can get a little conspiratorial there. But but we have real problems. I mean, I know a lot of people along those border states, and they are freaking out at what's happening in their states. So, that's a huge issue. So, whether it be the anchor babies where somebody can cross the border, come here, have a baby, and now they're a legal citizen, and then they can get on welfare. And I mean, this free phone deal. Somebody traced all the phone numbers and like tons and tons of these free phones given to people on welfare are being used in Mexico. I mean, it comes to a point in time where you got to go, you can't do this anymore. This is not what immigration's about. This is not what a guest worker program is about. And I think it's a hot issue, so it's worth discussing. So anyway,
I agree.
Go ahead.
Kelly here, I want to put my hand up.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, I think Don had a brilliant point. It's whether it's Mexican or American, is this welfare state that we have created is going to be a ship that's top heavy, and it's going to turn over and be it filled with Americans or Hispanics coming over, and it is a problem. I mean, if I was the president, I would send the National Guard with the consent of each state, the governor. I'd guard the borders right now, and I would have a program. If you want to come in, you got to take a constitutional exam. You have to pass it. Of course, speak English. You have to take your state constitutional exam. Learn about trial, jury, and grand jury. And, obviously have no criminal record. I mean, I know Hispanics, and some are really incredible people. There's no question about it. But we have to have, just like Don was saying, we have to have standards. Do we just let anybody in? No. We don't want criminals flooding. So that's one thing. And then Don has brought up about the war on drugs, et cetera, et cetera. I want to get his take and Jay's take regarding whether it should be a federal issue or should it be turned over to the hands of the states, depending on what type of drug laws, which types of drugs are outlawed or allowed or whatever. because the federal government should get involved when things do cross borders, you know, say from California to other states, but, you know, very possibly. But, it, you know, is it up to the drug war, is it up to the feds, which, by the way, has completely failed to just say no is a joke. But
yeah.
Is this a state or a federal issue, the drugs?
Well, if I could chime in here real quick, you know, I was going to comment on your test for citizenship. I'd be afraid that if you gave that to some Americans, you'd probably have to wind up deporting them as well.
I know.
You know, so
well,
be careful.
Maybe we
you
should.
Those, some of those
maybe
requirements.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, maybe not a bad idea, right? So, but yeah, as far as the war on drugs, of course, you know, the libertarian ideal is, you know, don't initiate force and fraud. And get out of people's business. So really, you know, yes to the federal government getting out of any sort of prohibition. And, you know, I've told people that I've talked to, you know, it's it really, when it comes down to libertarians, you know, we really fight against a big central federal government. That's like a big
yeah.
issue. And really, most of these issues that we'll discuss tonight or that, you know, we'll discuss, you know, with several other people, you know, most of these they should be discussed on the state level. Really, we should
yeah.
be, you know, going against state governments for infringing on our rights and stealing our money. You know, well, we shouldn't be getting, you know, all this grief and harassment from the federal government. Now, you know, again, I would have the same stance federally or locally is that stay out of my business. You know, some guy wants to sit in his mom's basement and, you know, smoke some weed, you know, fine. You know, it's none of my business. You know, it's his right to do so. It's his body. I don't own it. I don't own his life. I can't control what he does. So, you know, that's going to be at least my stance, regardless of whether it's a federal or a state issue. But I definitely think that the federal government, for sure, should get out of not only this one, but, you know, the war on drugs, but most everything. And one thing I was going to maybe try and interject as well is that, really, again, a lot of the issues that we'll discuss tonight and that will, you know, that you discuss on a day-to-day basis with folks is really, they're really symptoms of what the major problem is. You know, the big problem is that we have such a huge federal government that's so involved in every aspect of our lives and is stealing money to fund itself to do all that stuff. So, you know, immigration, you know, education, abortion, all these things that all, you know, come up a lot, they're just symptoms. You know, if we can fix the main problem, which is this massive, you know, top-heavy federal government, and return, you know, all this control to the states, then, you know, then I think we'll be well on our way to fixing all the other problems that we have today.
Well, Jay, I want to ask you a quick question. Have you been listening to Robert's show? Because we did a series on state sovereignty, and we went through an item by item by 20 things that our conclusion was the federal government shouldn't be even having their hands in these. Have you been listening to our program, or did you just come to this by yourself?
No. I missed the show that you had for that one, but I missed the state sovereignty one.
But you came to this position essentially by yourself, though, really, or a libertarian influence.
Yeah, well, no, actually, well, I had, as far as libertarianism, coming over to libertarianism, is that what you're asking?
Well, how did you, I mean, you mirror my position that the federal government is too big, and a lot
right.
of these decisions should be left in the hands of the states. You're mirroring that.
Right.
And
right.
I'm glad that we've come to this conclusion independently, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yes, yes,
and,
you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. And
yeah,
it's making sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, what makes a lot of sense is when you see Gary Johnson say, I'm going to cut the federal government by 43%, you begin to understand where your thinking is coming from. It's simply the federal government's too big, doesn't belong in our lives this much.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes sense to me.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, that's one of the things that I try to put my liberal friends at ease, and, you know, of course, conservatives too, is that, you know, when we talk about, you know, cutting, when Gary Johnson talks about cutting 43%, of federal spending, well, he's not going to cut state budgets, because there's always that, of course, there's that predominant thinking among a lot of people that if the government doesn't do it, then no one's going to do it. Well, that's not really the case in most issues, but, you know, if it comes down to, you know, roads and schools and all these other issues, We should be talking about these on the state level. I mean, why should I care, you know, what some guy in Texas does or in California does? We should be concerned more with what goes on in – I should be more concerned with what goes on in Tennessee than all the other states. So,
bingo.
I agree with both that. With all that, I think safe rights is really interesting. I think we had a speaker here this last month, Kelly, and I think I may have mentioned him to you, a young man that's running for the state house in Florida, and he was talking about nullification from the point of view of states being able to nullify federal law. Now, it's the first time anybody's brought that kind of a nullification to my attention. I've been involved with the jury nullification here for quite some time, realizing that the jury has the right to nullify the law as well as determine guilt or innocence based on the facts. And so, but the nullification of the law by state legislators is something I had not focused on, and I am now. I really am. I do think that we need to get back to a states' rights situation where the states have the right to and exercise their rights in a very affirmative manner. You know, when Reagan was in the White House, he was talking about eliminating the Department of Education because the Department of Education is a joke. You know, when you start looking at the way our organization of schools is, it's all at the local level. And as a matter of fact, even today, as much influence as the federal government has, they're only putting about 17% of the money into the school system. The rest of it is state and local funding. And, you know, that's ridiculous that they have as much control as they do for a very, very small percentage of the money being routed back to us that they've taken from us and taken through D.C. and back into the community. But the fact is that we're getting a whole lot less dollars back than we put in to the federal system. That's just not an effective and efficient way to run things. And having it run at the local level is where it's supposed to be. And, you know, so I'm 100% with you guys on your idea of states' rights. You know, I was born and brought up in Arkansas, and we were very much a states' rights type of organization there always. I mean, the whole philosophy there is of that nature.
And, well, let me ask you this key. Well, I'm sorry. You ready?
Go ahead.
Let me ask you this key question, because, and then we can get out of immigration, because I think we hashed on it pretty good. But here is me sitting back listening to all the views. Now, I know that there's libertarians want open borders and they want, you know, like you were talking about fair. I'm not sure I buy into fair very good myself personally, because I'm tired of paying for everybody else's fare. But, you know, that's me. But, you know, there's other issues, too. There's health. You know, there's third world nations coming into our country bringing illnesses. There's tuberculosis cases starting to show up in the country. So it's a big topic, and we could go on for hours on this thing. But here's the question. Let's say Gary Johnson gets in there, and he is a, you know, a 10th Amendment guy, and he tells people, go ahead, do what you want to do on your borders, like these states are trying to do, and Obama is attacking them and suing them back. And lets them clean up their borders and lets them deal with the crime and lets them, you know, get these criminals out of their border cities and gives a guy the ability to actually fight back and fire a gun and kill a guy that's trying to kill him on his own ranch. Is Gary going to come in there and go, no, I want open borders so you can't protect your own state? Is he going to block that, or is he going to let it really work that way?
I think he'll let it work that way. I don't think it's any.
See how I'm asking that? It's kind of a tricky question, but you get where I'm going with this, right?
You realize he was a two-time governor of the state of New Mexico.
Sure.
And that's a border state. So if you want to find out how he'll react to that, look at what he did in New Mexico. And I'm not sure. I have not personally investigated that, but I would suggest to you that the man is a pragmatist. He will do what works. And if it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't work, stop doing it. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that what we've got now is a disaster. You know, I'm older than anybody probably else on this call, but I can remember the day when the flow of immigrants from Mexico into the country every year was following the crops. They'd move all the way from Texas to Michigan, and they would go back home at the end of that. And I was reading something by a guy who used to do that, and he made enough money to buy himself a small ranch down there, and he's now retired from it because it's no longer economically feasible to do that. Okay,
right.
And the reason it's not is because we've mechanized our farms, and we don't need the kind of volume of guest workers, if you will, that we used to have. So it's not a question so much of needing to enforce that. The economics of it will enforce it. The fact is, though, we've got to get rid of the welfare state, and when we cut 43% out of the federal budget in 1 year, we're going to get rid of the welfare state. There won't be another welfare state. And the same thing with Medicare. You know, Medicare is wonderful, and we ought to have it probably for some people that really are destitute, but the fact of the matter is it shouldn't be what it is today. And for heaven's sake, the food stamp that Obama has done is just outrageous. I mean, they're advertising food stamps in Mexico. Come on.
Well, they get free phones down there from here. Why shouldn't they have food stamps?
Well, I mean, you know, they're telling the people to come here to get food stamps. I mean, what the hell is this? I mean, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist either, Kelly, but I, you know, this is about.
I'm becoming one more. Hey, Donald, I'm becoming one more and more every day.
I hate to say it, but I am too.
Indeed, gentlemen, we can bring this up later in the conversation if we go on after these other questions. But yes, I'll go ahead, Rex. I'm going to leave you to floor. He is in, and I believe he'll be covering foreign affairs and other topics. Go ahead, Rex.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Before I get into the foreign affairs questions, which I'm sure are on people's minds, I have one brief point that's out there that I think needs to be addressed, and I'm actually curious to know the answer. Mr. Johnson has misstated the amount of ballots that both Mr. Virgil Goode of the Constitution Party and Ms. Jill Stein of the Green Party are on, and then turned his turrets towards Obama and Romney. And I can understand that from a political campaign standpoint, that he wants to go after the big dogs. But doesn't it seem counterproductive to misstate the ballot access of the other two candidates who are likely to assist in defeating Barack Obama and Mitt Romney?
Well, if you've got that as facts, I would certainly agree with you. I don't have any reason to doubt that what you're saying is true, but I'm just not familiar with that from a point of view of having any knowledge of the facts. And I would say to you that I can't imagine, frankly, I can't disagree with the idea that he should be going after the major candidates, because one of the two of them is probably going to be the person that he must beat. And he's got to take a great, huge bite out of their electorate in order to be able to win the presidency. So, you know, to spend time on other candidates would be, to me, a complete waste of his time. I don't know why he'd bother.
No, I agree that he shouldn't be necessarily campaigning against the other independent candidates. But the issue with misstating their ballot access, I mean, let's face it, even though Mr. Johnson is probably more liberal, socially speaking, than Obama, and definitely more fiscally conservative than Romney, it's more likely that someone like Jill Stein will take votes away from Obama at a larger clip than, you know, Gary Johnson. And clearly Obama's the big dog to take down, considering his latest estimates are that he's got 100 electoral votes ahead of Mitt Romney. So is Mitt Romney really a factor? Isn't Mr. Johnson competing against Barack Obama?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you entirely. In fact, that's where he must focus his attention, in my opinion. And the fact of the matter is, and he needs to take Democrat votes, and he can take Democrat votes. There are Democrats that I am more impressed all the time with the fact that the liberal press is becoming more and more disenchanted with Obama, particularly Kelly and I have been working on this idea of using the grand jury to go after Obama on this ridiculous kill list that he's got, which is by all means completely illegal and unauthorized, and indeed may very well at some point in the future subject our so-called pilots of the drones to war crimes acts. I mean, you know, the Nuremberg trials set a precedent. You can't just say, well, I was given an order by, you know, by a higher authority. They'll hang you for that.
I agree, and that actually segues into my next question, because I think
Kelly, here, let me interject quick. Three Americans have been killed by drones. One from New Mexico, one from Denver, and one from North Carolina. They were American citizens. They were killed in Yemen by a drone. So that right there it violates the Nuremberg agreement. It's already happened.
Well, I think that it brings up an important point. I mean, I don't think that anybody who's, you know, not a statist or a corporatist is interested in having drones going around killing American citizens. But the real question here is, it seems to me that you know, Barack Obama, obviously, because the Republicans are stupid enough to run Mitt Romney, who's absolutely terrible, is pretty much on his way to winning. So to force his loss, it's about reducing his votes. And in that regard, I think his weakest point is without a doubt the wars, because he ran on hope and change and he promised to end them, and all he's done is increase more wars and make us less safe. So the question is, you know, the Middle East is erupting again, and clearly that's in large part due to Obama's continuation of many of George Bush's policies and actually even considerably more bungling. And China and Russia and Iran and Syria and even now, you know, China and Japan, there's some issues out there. So it looks pretty significant. So how does Gary Johnson profess to keep us safe, follow the Constitution, support our military, and manage to kind of put a chip in Obama's base, who are generally anti-war, and he seems to be a pretty hawkish president?
Well, he's not hawkish at all. I'm sorry. I was just listening to him just an hour ago, maybe 2 hours ago now. But he's not hawkish at all. What he's saying is he's going to bring everybody home and bring them home now.
I meant Obama was hawkish.
Oh, okay. Well, Obama has turned hawkish since he's gotten into the White House,
right.
And I think that that's a question of power corrupting and absolute power corrupting absolutely. The man now has the capacity to go out and kill people. I don't know where he stops, and I don't think it necessarily is going to stop in the Middle East. And you know, so I'm scared to death. This man, he's a danger to our, he's a danger to every one of us as U.S. citizens. But regardless of that, I think that. Gary Johnson, which is what I was under the impression you were asking, Gary Johnson is basically a pacifist. He wants to get the heck out of there and let these people work out their own problems. And I think that's the only thing we can do. You know, we have given countries around the world at various times the opportunity to become democracies, and some of them have been successful and dramatically successful.
Indeed.
I mean, you can't argue with the idea of Japan and Germany. And the way they have come back and built their countries with a democracy. And there are other examples around the world, too. But the fact is that you cannot, I would almost say in a Muslim world, you're dealing with people that are so retarded as far as their culture is concerned, there's nothing you can really do for them. And so why would we waste our time and money at it? You know, the only reason we apparently need the Middle East at this point is for oil.
But I know what he means.
I don't think that's even a consideration. We can supply ourselves with our own energy, and I think we can do that within 24 months. I think it's ridiculous what we're doing. I mean, you know, just let's get out of there. And I think exactly what Johnson is saying.
I concur in that. You know, I wouldn't say that I'm a pacifist, but I would agree with the libertarian position of extricating ourselves from these foreign entanglements. But that brings up a very serious question, is that since we are an empire, and that is not necessarily up for debate whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I think it pretty much sucks, but the fact is, being a realist, we are currently the global empire. If we vacate all at once, don't we create a vacuum that will render things considerably more unstable and then kind of draw us back into further conflicts that we don't want to be in?
Well, you know, and if I could, I think that, you know, if we pull out of everywhere, I think the assumption is that some other military force will take over. You know, I think really, you know, of course, in my opinion, the best way is to pull out the military, but then replace it with trade, you know, free trade. And, you know, that will replace any sort of, I guess, vacuum left by some military presence. And the United States has troops in over 175 countries around the world. So, you know, pull all those home, bring them home, and really it's either A, you know, trade with these nations like we have been or start trading with them, Or B, let those countries declare their sovereignty and you know, go do their own thing. It really comes down to, you know, what kind of impression are we making on other countries by having a military presence there? I mean, does there really have to be a military presence there by anybody?
Well, I mean, of course, in principle, no. We should not have a military presence except where we have someone directly threatening us. But the fact is that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for example, you know, the Europeans have devolved into sheer socialism simply because they haven't had to spend money on the military, because basically we are NATO, so we've been their military. Now, I don't see any problem with pulling out of NATO, because the Europeans can fend for themselves, but the places where we've essentially become the de facto single power, especially tribal places like the Middle East, if we extricate ourselves rather rapidly, it's going to devolve so rapidly we're probably going to be sucked right back in. Isn't there a compromise strategy where we can pull out and leave relative stability as opposed to causing more stability, and wouldn't that be a better position to take?
Well, I think that's assuming that, you know, the American troops are causing stability in those areas. And, you know, and to say that places are just going to devolve into chaos once America's military is no longer there, you know, that, I don't know, to me that's not really a valid argument, because we don't know what's going to happen. We know that, yeah, there were some bad guys in some Middle East countries that did some bad things to their people. We decided to get involved, and so we've replaced those dictators and those tyrants with us. You know, now we're there, and are we really making things better? I mean, are we making these places safer?
No, of course. Of course, we're not making them safer.
Yeah, I don't think we are. And plus, you know, it comes back down to, you know, we're kind of causing some resentment, I would think, too. So not only are we, you know, we think we're saving the world, you know, by sending our troops everywhere, we're not really we're not America's policemen. And I remember, you know, gosh, in the 80s, you know, as far back as my political memory goes, that was the big topic. That was, oh, we shouldn't be America's policemen. We got all these troops everywhere, or, you know, we shouldn't really be doing that. Well, here we are 30 years later, and we're still having this discussion. And America, the world isn't a better place because we have more troops everywhere. And I think really it gets down, as far as, you know, for me as a libertarian, it kind of comes down to a trust issue. You know, we give people freedom. People should have freedom. But then what they do with that freedom is pretty much up to them, should be up to their judgment, their best judgment. And it's only an issue for me when their freedom infringes on my freedom. Well, you know,
yeah.
It's kind of, I think we have to kind of use that same argument with other countries, with foreign countries. Let them have their freedom. You know, let Iran and Iraq and Syria and Pakistan and Libya and all these other countries, you know what? You guys have your freedom. You know, do with it what you want to. Use it to your advantage or screw it up.
Well, I'm gonna chime in on that, if I may, gentlemen, since we're on the foreign policy issue. Of course,
go
one of the hot topics that is in the media a lot, and it has been for quite some time, is the possibility of Iran getting a nuclear weapon. So saying that, of course, they have their freedom, how would you address that issue about Iran getting a nuclear weapon? Is that something that the United States should have, you know, a hand in? And if that's true, there are a lot who are saying we should try to stop it if it becomes to the point where, you know, it looks like they're going to have one, or not. Is it in your opinion, that the United States should go ahead and let them do that?
Well, you know, I can jump in here. You know, America has, like, thousands of nukes, and so we're worried that you know, some other country might have one. And, you know, so it's kind of gets down to who are we to tell other countries what they can and can't have. It's like, you know, if your neighbor goes out and buys a gun, well, are you gonna you know, start watching him and you know, monitoring his movements and doing whatever? Well, not really. I mean, because it's his right to have – you know, because they probably see us as much as terrorists as some people in this country might see them.
Okay, well, let me interject this. Okay, let's say I do have a neighbor who just bought a gun. And if I heard that neighbor threatening another one of my other neighbors that if they get a gun that they're going to shoot them, and then they go out and buy a gun, yeah, I think I will have my eye on them. Because now I got to make sure that this person who just threatened one of my other neighbors, that they're going to kill them if they have a gun, then of course, yeah, I'm going to watch them.
Well,
even
are you going to live in
the
house, though?
Who's threatening? Who is, you know, threatening Israel? okay, which is one of the, you know, not particularly our neighbor, it's over the you know, ocean. However, using your analogy, then why would we not want to keep an eye on, and because this is more important, you know, and more, you know, such a larger issue than someone on a street having a gun. This is a nuclear mm-hmm. weapon that can kill millions. So is that something that we should take stock of? I mean, well, yeah, we got millions, but the United States isn't going around saying, okay, well, we need to wipe this country off the face of the earth.
Well, you know, we do that with regimes and you know, governments around the world.
We don't want to annihilate entire countries. But my point is the United States doesn't go around saying we're going to annihilate, you know, whole countries, and that country, you know, other, you know, countries don't have the right to exist, and much like Hitler, you know, and that's what Ahmad Davutoglu is compared to a lot, and for a very good reason. Then should we allow someone such as that, or a nation such as that, to have a weapon that can totally annihilate another country?
Well, again, I think it comes down to who is America to allow other countries to do this or do that. I mean, it's another country, and yes, I mean, you know, that might be dangerous. But, you know, I think it kind of comes down to, you know, do we restrict everybody's freedom or say that we're not going to let you have this weapon just because, you know, we're scared of them? I mean, we have – our military is massive. It's huge. And we have, you know, thousands of nuclear weapons. And, you know, it kind of comes down to, you know, they might be bad guys. They might have a bad government. It might be some evil people that want to do us harm. But, I mean, do we wait until – do we just send our troops over to Iran and occupy the whole country and tell them how to do it and run their country? It just – it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me that we have – you know, we have so much going on in this country that we need to fix, and so much presence, the military presence wherever around the world that's creating resentment, and then to say, oh, by the way, you know, you can't do this even though you're – another country.
Yeah, Kelly here. I want to throw something. I want to throw something in if I could. I want to hit the audience here with some artistic license, and then I want to talk about the Constitution. Yeah, a few years ago, my house was an absolute mess, so I decided to go clean up my neighbor's house on the left, on the right, and a couple down the street. Went across the street, and pretty much most of my neighbors hated me for that, doing that. And so then I realized, you know, I had to take care of my own house and stay out of other people's business. And it's a personal principle. But regarding all these issues with other nations, what we should not allow and this and that, I think intelligence would be extremely good. We have incredible intelligence, so we can keep an eye on things. However, it's real simple. It's in the Constitution. Only Congress has the power to declare war. If the American people want a war, oh, say World War I, World War II, then they write their congressman. The congressman signed the Declaration of War. Roosevelt signed it. Japan immediately, and the next day was against Germany in World War II. And we have a mechanism in which to deal with a lot of these problems regarding wars, invasions. Oh, yeah, the president does have 60 days under the War Powers Act. But why, after 60 days, when Congress hasn't done their job of either approving or disapproving of a war through a declaration, why are we still doing this? We are not following the Constitution.
Hear, hear. Exactly so. And let me just tell you guys a couple of things that I want to bring to your attention here. You know, the idea that we are the policemen of the world is ridiculous. Now, I agree with whoever it was that said we are an empire. We certainly are, and we may very well choose to remain one. But we don't have to remain one by pointing a gun at somebody. You know, there are a lot of ways to have influence over people's lives other than just threatening them with annihilation. And that's just the way things are. Milton Friedman pointed out that free markets are the absolute best weapon that we can have in the whole wide world. And if we are a free market society, and if we are a nonviolent society, which we should be, and I think we probably basically are, you know, we can do an awful lot with a whole lot less taxation on our people and just a whole lot more, you know. And by the way, I'm not concerned about whether or not we're liked or not. That should never be our concern, I don't think. But we should have moral principles, and we should live by those principles, and we should live by our Constitution. Our Constitution is the most magnificent document on the face of the planet. I mean, just you could talk about religious documents being perhaps better, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, the socialism does not work. So we don't really have to worry about that taking over the world. Capitalism is the only thing that builds wealth and builds it to the masses as we see here. The reason the world is so envious of us, gentlemen, is because of the wealth that we have created for our individual people. I have a friend of mine who's involved with a woman from Argentina, and she just goes berserk when she hears somebody talk about being poor in America. She says, there are no poor people in America. You cannot be in America and be poor. It just doesn't compute, because the free market here has brought us to the point where we are using a tiny percentage of our population to feed us. We are the most effective and efficient nation on the face of the planet. And we turn around and talk about ourselves as though we're some kind of a third world, almost non-existent society. This is not true. We are the most successful society in the world. And by the way, we also have the strongest military in the world at this moment. Now, that may change over time, but who cares? We ought not to need it. We are the traitors of the world. We are we are the most creative people in the face of the planet, and we do better for our citizens than anybody else on any level that you want to talk about. So, well, let's look at ourselves and start being proud of what we are. And also, let's look at the libertarian philosophy that says, you know, your freedom ends at the tip of my nose. You know, as long as you don't violate my body, I will not have any problem with you. And we ought to live by that. And we do live by it to the greatest extent. This you know, the violence that occurs in this society are because of things that we have outlawed. The drug prohibition is the biggest cause of violence in society without any equivocation. It just is. And, you know, that's shooting ourselves in the foot again. My grandfather did that. Why are we doing it again? I don't see any reason for it. But anyway, that's a different subject. But Kelly, you know, I'm on the same track with you as far as state rights are concerned, 100%. And I think that as far as its foreign policy is concerned, who cares if they get a nuclear weapon? All right, the Israelis care. All right, let the Israelis take care of it then. If they want to take care of that, let them take care of it. And, you know, there's no reason for us to care about things like that. The man's not going to have – suppose he has a half a dozen nuclear weapons. There's a lot of countries out there that already have nuclear weapons. They're not using nuclear weapons. You know, reminds me of a one-liner from Danny DeVito saying, and I think it was in Other People's Money, you know, nuclear weapons are like lawyers. You know, if anybody starts to use one, the whole thing stops. And so nobody's ever started to use nuclear weapons. And, you know, we're just kidding ourselves about that. Who cares if they get a nuclear weapon? I think this is all a distraction from the real problems that we've got. And whoever said we got problems here that we need to solve, they're absolutely right. Let's solve our problems here and let the other guy's house be his problem.
I just want to throw in one more point. Again, this is the Constitution. Now, I'm pro-Israel. It's just, you know, I come from a long line of Jewish hog farmers, so I'm biased towards the Hebrews, but anyway, I believe we have some treaties with them. Now, treaties, again, constitutional approach, the president signs it, but then it takes two-thirds of the Senate to approve a treaty for defense, and I think that's a pretty good idea because, once again, whether it's a declaration of war or a treaty, the American people get to write or contact their senators or their representatives in declaring war. It's the Senate. It's the only one that deals with treaties. So they can contact their senators and say, yes, we'd love a treaty. A stronger treaty with Israel would be good. Or the American people can say, no, let's not do that. We have a constitutional approach for allies. And it's beautiful because the people get to speak to their representatives.
I'm not sure how many of us take advantage of that, but I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's a privilege and it's an obligation that we have. And I'm not, as I say, I'm not sure we're taking advantage of it as well as we might. I'm 100% with you on your education of the public as far as things of this nature are concerned.
Cool. We hashed that one out. Well, no, it's hot issues, and there's people on all sides of this thing, if I can chime in for a second, Robert. There's people on all sides of this issue, and I really believe that, it's kind of interesting because, you look at Dr. Ron Paul's position on foreign affairs and our military involvement around the world, and you've heard his position. We've got, Mr. Virgil Goode that we interviewed, and he's got his positions, which are kind of similar. There's a lot of people out there that are getting sick and tired of the America being involved in endless wars and endless nation building, and to a point where we're just going, what the heck are we doing? We've got these escalating situations going on in the Middle East. We've all watched, Egypt and the rest of the other five, states of revolutions, and we're finding out that we're backing people who were also fighting in Afghanistan, who are killing our soldiers. I mean, it's something's wrong. There is no doubt about it. Something is broken. Our foreign policy is not working. Newt Gingrich, who many of us have studied extensively and followed for years, said that our foreign policy is upside down and sideways. He said that we're still operating on, 900-some bases around the world. We're still operating on the Cold War foreign policy, and we're getting our butts kicked all over the place, and we're not winning anything. So the question is now, and I think that's the debate, is, and Rex makes a great point, because we discuss this all the time. Do we just get up and walk out and walk away from our obligations and just leave a huge vacuum out there, or, how are we going to do it? This is a complex issue, and so there's going to be a lot of hot people on all sides. There's no doubt about it. But I think we hashed this one out pretty good. You want to go to the next question? Civil liberties pretty good, but if you want to redo it, Robert, whatever.
Okay, well, I think next we'll have Rex, and I believe Rex is going to go over and talk about and ask about the Fed. Go ahead, Rex.
Oh, okay. given that Dr. Paul, running in the Republican primary, brought the issue of monetary reform, auditing, and ending the Fed, where does the Libertarian Party stand on spending, deficit, the Fed, and in what ways does Governor Johnson differ in these positions from Congressman Paul?
Well, I can jump in here real quick. I know that as far as spending and taxes, whatever, the Libertarians are very much against any of that. Essentially because taxation, at least the taxation that we have today, is really based on force. I mean, you're coercion. You're taking things away from people that they don't consent to. I know Gary Johnson has come out and endorsed the fair tax, which it really essentially is a national consumption tax. And you do away with every other tax that there is today. You replace it with a sales tax, and that's kind of how you continue to fund the federal government. And conceivably, once you cut 43%, then the tax, of course, would hopefully, decrease at the same amount. But as far as I guess that's pretty much how it stands today. As far as the Fed, though, it's pretty much kind of a very dangerous organization. Simply because it's inflated our currency. It's inflated the values of everything. It's made all this phony worth that really isn't there. I mean, it's created a system that is very, very susceptible to implosion. And I'm not sure, auditing the Fed is great. It might be a good idea, but I guess maybe I was a little unclear on, the intent of auditing it. It's great to audit it and know where the money's gone, but the fact is the money's gone. And so, the only way to fix any sort of problem with the Fed is just to cut spending, stop spending so much money, and try to bring some value back to our currency.
And how would we bring value back to our currency, given that the Federal Reserve is still standing?
Let me jump in here and say that I don't think the Federal Reserve spends anything. Congress spends. And the Federal Reserve is a creature of Congress. And anyone who thinks that the Federal Reserve does anything without it being instructed to do so by Congress, I think is just missing the whole point. The whole point here is that we are spending 43 cents out of every dollar. We're having to borrow 43 cents out of every dollar that the federal government is spending. And so what they're doing is they're inflating. You know, this is taxation, yep. But it's just hidden taxation. That's all it is. So you can talk about what however you want to. The Federal Reserve was set up for a specific reason, and it was set up with the idea that it would help the clearance of and be the lender of last resort to any commercial bank that got into trouble. It was never set up and never, as far as I know, as long as Glass-Steagall was in place, never had the right to loan money to an investment bank. It could only loan money to commercial banks, and only then under the circumstances that they were in sufficient trouble so that the Fed had to step in and bail them out, basically. And they didn't bail them out. They closed them down. We've closed down bunches of banks every year in this country that get themselves in trouble because they've made inappropriate loans. But that's neither here nor there. But let's get back to where we are here. The Federal Reserve has done, in my opinion, a lot of really good things in that it has kept us from having the kind of runs on banks that we had in the 20s and early 30s, that where people lost their money and they were not able to get their money out of banks that were being closed because they didn't have liquidity enough to pay off depositors. You know, that's a whole different animal. We're not there now. We haven't faced that. To say we're going to close down the Fed is to miss the whole point. You don't need to close down the Fed. You need to close down the Congress and put those people all out on the street. In fact, a bunch of them ought to be put in jail. You can start with Barney Frank and Chris Dodd. Those bastards ought to be in for life. What they've done to our financial community and what they've done to our banking community is unforgivable. It's unforgivable. You know, it's just absolutely just without any equivocation, crime on a massive, massive scale. And you can look at other congressional situations where the Congress is overspending. Look, we need a balanced budget amendment worse than almost anything else you can name, okay? We need some way to prevent the federal government from spending one dime more than it takes in. Now, you can say that any way you want to. But the states are operating under that. Almost every state, in fact, I think every state in the United States has to balance its budget every year. Now, some of them are operating with gimmicks and this and that and so forth. But when it comes down to it, they don't create money, and they cannot go out and spend money indefinitely without being able to borrow it into the market at a competitive rate. And that's just the way things are. The Federal Reserve is, as I say, gentlemen, it is a creature of Congress. Congress, I love Ron Paul, okay, and I've always loved him. But dadgummit, you know, he knows very well that Congress is where the problem lies. And he was there in Congress as the only one saying the right thing for a very long time. And he continuously talked about, you know, well, okay, go audit the Fed, but remember what the Federal Reserve is. It is owned by basically bankers in the country. And most of those bankers, you can buy stock in that bank if you want to. You can become an owner of the Federal Reserve today if you choose to. I heard Gary Johnson on today saying, well, you know, the Fed is borrowing money at a zero cost and loaning it out to the banks at a zero cost, and then the banks are turning around and buying United States government bonds with that same money, and they're taking out 2% or a point and a half or something like that out of the economy for no risk at all, absolutely zero risk. Well, maybe that's true. But the fact of the matter is that inflation is honest, gentlemen. It has not been – we're not being told what the inflation rate is.
I understand. We've got – at this time, I'd like to bring in some callers who've been waiting on hold for a while. I apologize for interrupting, but we only have about 30 minutes left of airtime here for questions, and I'd like to open it up at the audience. Perhaps when someone comes in, they'd like you to elaborate more on the deficit and inflation and the Fed. But at this time, however, I would like to bring in someone who's been on hold for a while, and that is area code 925. If you could just tell us your name and location, and then just tell us what's on your mind, and ask either one of these two gentlemen your question. At this time, I'll be bringing in 925. Hello, 925. How are you?
Hey, this is Paul. I'm glad to hear all you guys tonight. Some really, really good stuff that I'm hearing. I think you're hitting on the questions that I had.
Where are you calling from tonight, Paul?
Hey, Paul. Listen to me. Sorry, Paul. Richard. I'm in Brentwood, California. It's
California.
About,
I just out of my curiosity, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're about 50 miles due east of Oakland.
Oh, okay. How'd Oakland do today? I know they're playing the Steelers. But anyway, I digress. That's not what we're talking about tonight. I just know that who was the Oakland Raiders are playing the Steelers. So go ahead.
Sure, no problem. As I've seen in chat and some of the conversation as we with our esteemed guest here, the foreign policy around wars, not wars, and around projection of military might or projection of power, and how it affects stability in the world, in the vacuum of what happens in that vacuum, and the United States is not projecting that stability of power. I think there's some very good discussion on it, and I didn't want to drag it back up again. But there is one topic that I would like to have a little discussion on, and this is the disenfranchisation of conservative folks within the GOP by the actions that the RNC has put upon us GOP faithful that are now totally disenfranchised, and we have a think on this that we call, and I'm not trying to touch on this softly, but at the same time, call it like it is, so to speak. We're seeing this RNC versus DNC with their candidates as one is my criminal's better than your criminal, and as we talk and lament about this in a little bit more social setting rather than professional setting, we're really trying to understand your party. One of the things that we have talked about is what if Governor Johnson put those things out there and surfaced them and brought them to the surface of the discussion within either the debates or within the political media arena forums that he does in, and calls out these two candidates for what they are. And becomes a clear choice third party for as we sometimes say, the dastardly deed for both of them. And there's probably a better way to say it in the forums of political, within the forums of, let's say, the average Joe American, so to speak. But realizing that we here are the average Joe American now. We are becoming the unsilent majority, as you say. So I'd like to get your thoughts around what about this, the way that these two candidates, the DNC, RNC, really conducted themselves as what we see it, really dastardly. So I'll stop at that right there.
Well, it sounded like your question was, how does the these two candidates from the RNC and the Republican and Democrat are kind of going at one another and not really representing what they say. Is that kind of your question?
Well, so the two candidates are continuing to try to find their traction with what they've done, so to speak. And let's face it, neither one of them have good things to show of what they've done in the past. So they're, you know, the way that they are trying to get traction against the other is through negativism. And both of them, you know, have had, you know, acts that we consider criminal in what they have done. Some of the things that sitting president is doing with his executive orders and other things that we consider criminal against the Constitution of the United States, even just the executive executive powers of what considered legal within the executive powers branch. And then, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the travesties that were perpetrated against the GOP faithful at the RNC convention. Right?
Right.
That was just a travesty.
Right.
So as and you know, Governor Romney sits right in the chair of having those things happening for him with him. So him not having knowledge of that, I don't think anybody will say.
Yeah.
So when we, so those things, and contrasting those things to someone who really just rolls up their sleeves and gets the right things done. Right.
Yeah,
putting those, that's where I'm going.
Paul, real quick, this is Robert. Yeah. I just want to know if you could put that into three questions or three sentences or less for a question, because I think we're wondering, you know, where it's all going. So if we can have is there a direct question or?
Yeah. Okay. Direct question. Can Gary Johnson use that to his advantage by defining his competition in such a way that puts that raises those facts to the surface for the public?
I think that you're onto something, and I think that it's really quite an interesting strategy you're proposing. As I hear your strategy, what you're saying is that not only are the Democrats disenchanted with their candidate, and I think they are. I mean, they make a lot of noise to the contrary, but I think they truly are, at least their base is. And you've got the same kind of situation because of the way the Republicans treated their particular people, their real backbone of their party, at their own convention, was just unforgivable. And so you've got disenchantment on both within both parties, and you're saying, can Gary Johnson strategically take advantage of that? And I would suggest to you he absolutely can take advantage of it. I think you have hit upon something that we need to bring to his attention, and I think that we can bring that to his attention, and we will. Without trying to spend a lot of time on it, there are ways that we can still win this election, and that's really the question. How do we win the election? And I would say to you that Kelly and I have been working on a backup plan to run this man out of office if he is elected. I mean, you know, the idea of grand juries going after the President of the United States because he's violating the Constitution and every damn law just about there is, you know, is a powerful, powerful concept. And the idea that grand juries have the power to do this, in fact, Kelly's even of the opinion that the thing that ran Nixon out of the White House was five grand juries and not not Woodward or Bernstein out of the Washington Post. I mean, it was not the exposure of Deep Throat or anything like that. It was the grand juries that scared the guy, and because he was about to get put in jail. I mean, you know, a sitting president has not yet been put in jail, to my knowledge. The fact is, he was about to be the first, and this one who we got now damn well deserves to be the first. I mean, you know, he's doing things that are just completely unacceptable. The fact is, how do you get Gary Johnson into the White House? And that's a whole different issue, and I think you've come up with a strategy that might very well do it. I think both parties are disenchanted with their candidates, and we should be able to get a third-party candidate elected. And I think this man that we've got currently is our candidate, Gary Johnson, is better qualified than anybody else that's in the field currently. And maybe I'm just being prejudiced here by saying, you know, because I'm a libertarian, but I've heard the man, I've met the man, I've met shaking his hands, I've had discussions with him about a number of things on a one-on-one basis, and I am impressed with this man. He, you know, I say again, you know, anybody that can climb Mount Everest can do damn near anything, and maybe he can do anything, including become President of the United States. Let's put him in.
Well, and that's definitely something that, you know, we're looking at and vetting a lot of these third-party candidates and answering these questions. And speaking of that, I do have another person on hold. And thank you very much, Paul, for calling in and asking your question this evening. I really appreciate it. And so at this time, we will be bringing in area code 214. So if you could just give us your name or where you're at and give your question, that would be great. Thank you, 214. Your mic is on.
Robert, it's Rainelle.
Oh, hi, Rainelle. Thank you very much for calling. And just refresh my memory, where are you calling from?
I'm in Texas.
Texas? Okay. Yeah, I'm not much with all the area codes. I apologize for that.
Well, you and I have talked before on the telephone when we were needing some help in the primary, remember?
Oh, yeah, I recall. I remember. It's just all these area codes, and I don't have them memorized which state they're in, and I apologize for that. So,
that's okay.
But I appreciate you calling in. It's great to hear from you again.
Well, I don't really have so much of a question as I have. I want to take issue with the gentleman who thinks that there is no problem with illegal immigration. My state is overrun by illegal immigrants, and it's just zapping our economy right and left. Robert, I go up and down my highways here, and all I see is signs, billboards in Spanish. When I go to the polling places, they tell everybody, now, if you need help, if you can't speak English, we'll translate for you. I have their grocery store aisles that are full of only Hispanic items and things just laid out for Hispanics, Walmarts and things of that nature, especially on Sundays, are full of Spanish-speaking people. I can't even hear English being spoken in my town. It's all Spanish. I worked at a high school here in DeSoto, Texas, for years, and the kiddos that were Hispanic would sit in little cliques and speak in Spanish and totally annoy all the other kids who thought they were speaking about them. Probably weren't, but it didn't matter. And I would have to remind them, you are here, you want to do that at home, that's your business, but you speak English. And it's really, really bad here. 70% of illegal aliens in Texas receive welfare. And there are 1.5 million illegal immigrants that reside in Texas. And at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas, which is a county hospital, which is where a lot of the poorer people go. There were 11,071 babies born to non-citizens in 2009. That was 74% of the total deliveries in that year. But these are anchor babies. These are the anchor babies that come over here and get all kinds of free stuff. I go to a DMV to get my driver's license renewed. I sit for 3 hours and wait. A Hispanic man who can barely speak English walks up and gets his in 15 minutes. It's really, really bad. It's really bad. The crime rate is horrible when it involves illegals in this state. It is really, really bad. I even looked up some stuff this afternoon. Let me look real quickly here. 42,636 road deaths in this state involved illegal aliens. Steve King of Iowa even reported 8 American children are victims of sexual abuse every day by illegal aliens. 1 year study by the Violent Crimes Institute estimated there are about 240,000 illegal immigrant sex offenders in this country. And it's not even so much that they're coming to work. A lot of these illegals are running here because they're running from the law in their own country. And they see this as a good place to be, because they can just melt right into society, and this naive idea that giving them a better way to become a citizen is just not going to work. It doesn't work that way. It sounds nice on paper, but it doesn't work that way. And we have got to stop this. Schools are overrun with kids who can't speak English. There are Mexican men standing in every town on street corners waiting for somebody to come along. Give them a day job that they will receive cash for and never pay a penny of tax on. So, you know, it sounds really good. It sounds really good, but it doesn't work like that. And we need to stop this, and we need to close those borders. And it's not just Mexican people coming over here. It's also people from the Middle East who are coming over here and just blending right in with these people because it's easier for them to get in when they can come in with these other illegals from other countries like that. So it's a dangerous situation. It's costing us bukus of money, and we need to do something about it. And everybody who thought Rick Perry was such a wonderful governor here in Texas has done nothing. He has done nothing to help this situation. He even said that Jan Brewer in Arizona, when she signed the immigrant laws there, said it wouldn't work for Texas. It just wouldn't work for Texas. And he has even set up a while back a way for Texas and Mexico. He said he was very excited that Texas Secretary of State Henry Cuellar was working on an initiative that could extend the benefits of telemedicine to individuals living in the Mexican side of the border. He's been trying to have, things like that. So to say that it's not a problem, I think, in my opinion, sitting here in Texas, it is a huge problem. And that's what I've got to say tonight.
Yes,
well,
right now.
If I could speak to that real quick,
go ahead, and then if she's got a direct question after you speak on that, that would be great.
Okay,
and
sure.
We'll go from there.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. If I could speak to that, you mentioned how it costs Texas so much money, or immigration across the country costs this much. And again, I think it gets back down to really the core problem is the fact that the government is giving away free stuff. You shouldn't come to this country because you expect to live for free. You shouldn't come to this country because you expect to be paid a certain amount of money. And minimum wage laws destroy, entry-level positions for everybody, really. So that's why you have so much of this, people waiting on the corner to work for $2 a day or whatever. They're taking jobs under the table, so to speak, just because the minimum wage laws are what they are today. I mean, it's all these laws that are really hurting the businesses, and it's all these handouts that are really hurting or costing, I guess if you want to put it that way, states and the country money. So really, it's one of those, again, immigration is a symptom of really what the bigger problem is, and if you keep the government, if we can somehow restrain it down to the fact that it's not giving away everybody's money, then, conceivably people that come to this country will be the ones that want to contribute to society. Now, we could pass every law in the book, and you're still going to have the bad things happen. Or we could, take all the laws off the books, and you're going to have bad things happen. So, you've got a lot of bad people, sex offenders. There's a lot of car accidents that involve only Americans. I mean, there's a lot of really bad people that are Americans. To say that illegal immigrants are involved in crimes, well, Americans are too. It might be, I don't know if it's worse one way or another. I think I read a statistic, might have been last year, that said at least as many, if not more, Americans receive welfare than do illegal immigrants. It just gets back to let's fix the real problem, which is the overbearing government, the government that gives away all of your money. I really think most of these issues, including immigration, would work their way out.
Okay. Well, meantime, between the fall of 2004 and the summer of 2008, there was $33.6 million in state and institutional aid given to illegal aliens in my state. And you're right.
Right.
It needs to be fixed. It does need to be fixed. But meanwhile, we've got to close those borders. We can't continue to allow them to pour into this country the way they're doing. We can't do it. Economically feasible. You've got to stop it. You've got to get that fence needs to be done down there. We need to get those people in these wars overseas back home and put them down there to help close that border. It's got to be done. And just giving them green cards or giving them a way to become legal citizens, in my opinion, just is not feasible right now.
I agree with that entirely.
Hold on, folks. And with that, we're going to move on. I believe that Chris wants to chime in on something here. Chris? You there, Chris? Yep.
Can you hear me? Whoa. Got me?
I got you. There you are.
Okay, sorry, I had you muted.
Anyway, I want to bring just a little bit of sanity to this conversation, because I think that what Josh is saying is correct, and on one hand, that is important, and what Rennell is saying on the other hand is correct. And it's something that, Newt said in the debates. We're never going to solve this until we close the border and stop the crime wave. Then we can sit down and look at the other issues, because I don't think anybody's going to get voted in as president and stop everybody receiving welfare in one fell swoop. You will have riots in the street. This is so deep in our country now. And whatever the number of illegal aliens that receive, free services, it's bigger than anybody thinks it is. But so, you know, it's like a multi-pronged thing. So while we're all trying to fix all the other problems, like government intervention in our lives and states' rights and all those other things, the crime wave still comes over the border. And that's, I think that's the frustration that most conservatives have with the kind of utopian libertarian, we should, you know, everybody should work together. Well, nobody is working together is the problem. And so we're screaming, stop it, so that we can then fix those other problems. Anyway, I just wanted to put that in. You know, I don't, okay, I'm done.
Donald Sheldon, let me just address something here. I think this woman is absolutely correct in one of the, in many of the things that she's saying. The borders do need to be sealed. There's no question about that. The question is the mechanics of it are something that is really kind of interesting, and not only just interesting, it's just almost overwhelming. Texas has got a 1,000-mile-long border, and probably half or more of that, according to what I'm told, is just wide open. You could just walk across the thing just any place you want. And the Rio Grande is no barrier at all. And so it's like, you know, we've got a real mechanical problem here. That's one issue. But let me tell you what I think the biggest issue is. I think the incentive to come to the United States, because we are giving away, your Texas governor, I heard him talking about giving free college education, or I should say not free, in-state college education to illegal aliens. It just shocked me. I couldn't believe listen, I'm from Arkansas. I couldn't believe you guys were putting up with that. I really couldn't believe it.
That's exactly right. I've been trying to tell people that about Rick Perry for a long time, and they don't listen to me. They think he's wonderful. Well, he's not so wonderful.
You keep talking, girl. Don't ever give up, all right?
All righty.
Because, you know, you're on to something here, and I'm going to guarantee you, your Texas friends, your Texas, not going, don't mess with Texas now. I mean, you got a huge asset there, and the women of Texas have been my favorite kind of women forever. So you just get out there and just do your thing, because you're gonna pound some dirt in the faces of these people that are getting out there. Look, there's too much incentive for people to come across that border. You have hit it on the head. There's too many things they can get by being on this side of the border. So number one, cut those things off. I mean, college education for people that are illegal? Come on. You know, that can't be.
But there are kids in this state who can't even get into our colleges because there's only a limited amount of space for them, and yet illegals can walk right in. That's the kind of stuff that's going on, and it's got to stop.
Right, and there's other issues, folks, with immigration, and also with, you know, immigrants getting, preferential treatment when it comes to small business grants and things of that nature.
Everything.
Exactly.
It's disgusting.
I do have another person who'd like to come in, and we only have about less than 12 minutes left. So if you just come in, give your name and location, and if you can ask one of the gentlemen a direct question, that'd be great. So 903, your mic is live.
Well, thanks. It's Mary from Texas. Mary Lynn.
Oh, another Texan.
Yes. And
Mary, I'm sorry. He interrupted your last name. Mary who?
Lewis.
Okay. Sorry.
Mary Lewis from Texas. I'm sorry to get here so late. I hate to miss the whole show, but I know it was good. But I totally agree. We need to definitely secure our borders. Our state is overrun by illegals and in our schools and and they're right. I've only been on for 5 minutes, so, but what I've heard so far, I can agree with.
That's good. Now, let me ask the question, same question I asked the last young woman from Texas.
Okay.
How mechanically would you go about closing a 1,000-mile border? I mean, what do you think it's going to take to do that, and how would you go about it?
Well, you know, that's not my job. I mean, I really haven't studied it. I wish I, you know, if I had, then I guess I would come up with a good plan. But I'm sure there's other people that's their job to do, and they're not doing it. But that's not my job. But I think it needs to be done.
Okay. What is your job in the real world?
I'm a real estate broker.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the idea, whose job would you claim it to be to close that border, and how would you, you know, just tell me who you'd like to have work on that for you.
Who would I like to work on that?
No. Who would you? Yeah. Who in Texas should be responsible for that?
Well, you tell me.
I'm asking you. You're a Texan. I'm not. I mean, I'm,
yeah.
I'm,
but are you more involved in politics and government than me? I mean,
yeah, Donald, you're being tricky, Donald.
You're more informed
than
that than me.
I didn't mean to be tricky. Let me back off of that.
All right,
I'll tell you that I think your governor needs to be involved in it, and I think that you need to get a governor in there that stops doing things that are just absolutely ridiculous, like the idea of granting college discounts to illegal aliens. In fact, any privileges that an illegal alien gets ought to be cut off, and you're going to have to talk to your own politicians down there about that, because apparently they're afraid of the of losing the Hispanic vote, and I don't much think that that's a possibility. I think that, you know, if you're honest with the legitimate immigrants, I should say, or legitimate Latino community, I don't think you'll have any problem with getting them to go with you as far as cutting off privileges to illegals. And I think, look, as long as the incentive is there to cross that border, the border is going to get crossed. And, you know, remember the Berlin Wall. There were people that actually were trying and successfully trying to get across that. I don't know how you cut off a society like that, because if there's an incentive, people will come across the wall. Now, how do you cut down on the incentives is a political issue, and you are a voter down there, and I'm not. But you've got to vote for people who are saying that they want to stop giving an incentive for people to come across the border. And
Some of us are trying. There's a city here close to Dallas by the name of Farmers Branch. They have said no more renting to illegals, and everybody is fighting them like crazy, and they are still fighting back. We've got, like you say, we've got to shut that stuff down. We've got to
there are a lot of illegals that don't agree with the, you know, other illegals. I mean, let me rephrase that. There are a lot of the Hispanic community that do not agree with the illegals coming across the border. I mean, they want to have something done about it, too, because they realize, I mean, they're in the same schools. The schools are messed up because of the situation. Overcrowding, people, you know, here that aren't paying taxes, and I mean, it's causing a lot of problems for a lot of communities,
I want to throw in some thoughts. Some of the greatest opponents to illegal immigrations are those who have come here legally,
yes,
and they don't like that other people are just pouring in here. Obviously, the pain they went through. And the value that they see in it, that they are the greatest opponents of illegal immigrants. You know, Hispanics who've come over. Again, I mean, it's really wonderful. Some girl I wanted to date, but I was too late. That's another story. Anyway, I want to throw out.
But anyway, gentlemen, actually, we're getting short on time here. I hate to say,
this is a quick thought, okay? We've kept bringing up illegal immigration. There's an organization. They're called Numbers USA. They're very powerful. They have grown. They're fighting illegal immigration. That's all they do. Numbers USA. Numbers USA. Join them. I get an email from them. They are very powerful. Numbers USA.
I found them already.
What I'd like to do now, folks, because as I said, I only have a limited amount of time here, is I want to thank the two gentlemen for coming in tonight. Thank you for everyone in the audience.
Yes, thank you.
And you're welcome, and the callers for calling in. So thank you, Mr. Polk and Mr. Sheldon, for answering the questions this evening, and for the people also out there listening and chatting on the archives. What I'd like to do with the last couple minutes is I'll leave it with this. If both, not both, but if Chris, we'll give Chris a minute, and then Rex, and then Kelly a minute to close things out. We'll proceed from there. So, Rex, go ahead. Rex, are you there?
Rex fell off.
Okay, Rex fell off. So go ahead, Chris. Perhaps.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming on and taking on the tough stuff. You know, I don't think it's all going to get answered by any person. I do agree, and Kelly and I agree, that 80%+ of the problems of this country would be dealt with if we got the federal government out of our lives, whether it's immigration, whether it's social issues. You know, we have got to get our communities and our states empowered again, because that's where the war is at. You know, these states on the borders are trying to get things done. They're trying to pass laws to protect their own communities, their own voters, and their own taxpayers, and the federal government's fighting them on it. I mean, it's just insanity. I don't know what the goal is. I don't know if the goal is to just destroy our country so they can remake it in some new world order crap. I don't know. You know, pick your conspiracy theory. But there's no sane man on the face of the earth that can believe that what these people are doing is good for this country. You know, it's falling apart. We're broke. It's falling apart. We're in wars all over the world. We're in war, you know, rumors of wars. We're policing the world. We got 900 bases around the world. We're spending money we don't have. Europe was able to practice socialism because they didn't have to pay for a military because we were it. I mean, there's got to be a point where either it's going to collapse and we're going to reboot, or we're going to get control of our country again. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not sure any one politician has it. I'm not sure any one theory has it. I know that this country federal government was formed by the states for a purpose, and now the federal government controls every aspect of our lives. So, you know, that much I do agree on. I'm done.
Well, thank you, Chris. And then we do have Rex back. So go ahead, Rex, and then Kelly. And then I'll close things out.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for being on and expounding on the Libertarian Party position. As a conservative, I find it to be somewhat problematic. However, I think that so long as Mr. Johnson is going to actively pressure Congress into cutting spending by at least 43%, I can't think of anything that is more attractive than that. I don't think that'll solve all our problems, but it'll certainly prevent an immediate economic collapse, which will cause chaos and allow even more police state actions to come in place. And I would argue that over and against Willard Mitt, Barack Hussein, Obama, Romney, Gary Johnson would be a breath of fresh air. And if he is willing to wield that veto pen on a federal stage, I applaud that effort, and I would like to see him really hammer Washington, because I think that we can fight about all our personal issues, and I'd love to stand there as your opponent in a republic that hasn't had a total economic collapse. And until such time, I'm happy to lock shields with you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Great.
And thank you, Rex. Then Kelly, go ahead.
Well said, Rex. And I want to thank my fellow libertarians, Jay and Mr. Sheldon, for coming tonight and clarifying what I've been trying to say for quite a while. A couple points. Immigration. Which candidate? We got Gary Johnson. See, that would be New Mexico. Some experience with illegal immigration. We have the Romulan from Massachusetts. And we got Obubu, Illinois. Which do you think has more experience with this issue? And number two, I'm just an absolute lover of the Constitution. It's absolutely brilliant. And which candidate do you believe will most enforce and live by and respect, abide by the Constitution? Will it be Obama? I'm going to put him at 5%, only when it fits his purposes. We got Romney at, I don't know, maybe 30%. And I suspect Gary Johnson will be at 90% to the respect of our Constitution. So with that said, I just wanted to leave the choice with people and I guess turn it over back to Robert.
Okay, well, thank you, folks. Yes, indeed, it's about that time. Thank you very much, everyone, and take care. And I will finish tonight as I finish every night, and that will be the song by Aubrey Ashburn. Thank you once again, everyone. Take care, and hope to see you soon. Good night.